5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff.
Hey there, Earthlings. Welcome to another episode of The Danny Project, brought to you by Neo Abilities. I am your host, Tessa, and I hope you grab your aluminum hats because we're on another exploration into all things disability. If you enjoy what we're doing here on the podcast and would like to have access to some more exclusive content, please be sure to check us out and join the crew on Patreon.
Discovery, go at throttle up.
So hello everyone, welcome to the podcast. This is The Danny Project. I am your host, Tessa Bethauer, and this is where we explore all things disability. Today I'm so excited to be introducing our wonderful guest and a fellow social worker, Emerson Gray. Before we get started, I just want to give her a big shout out because she's an amazing human that's been working with animals and people alike for a long time, and it's just amazing the work that she's been doing and the way that she's been changing the social work profession. So without further ado, Emerson, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction that you gave me. Yeah, I work as a veterinary social worker. You know, I think there's people that aren't quite familiar, especially still even in social work, with veterinary social work, what we do, or what I should say I do, because I go a little bit kind of off-grid, kind of doing my own thing compared to some veterinary social work programs or things that are out there or people who counsel. My motto is basically supporting the well-being of humans and animals.
I love that.
Yeah, thanks. You catch me, you know, I say that a lot. I just got done teaching a class at the beginning of April, and I always say that that's what I'm here to do and that animals matter. So that kind of is my own motto for veterinary social work. And I do all sorts of different stuff. I work with animal-associated trauma, animals and domestic violence. I do conflict resolution and mediation services. Veterinary, I work with veterinarians and veterinary staffs that do consulting for hospitals as well.
That's amazing that you do all of that. And, you know, I know we've talked in the past, and you have kind of an interesting story of how you got there. Would you mind sharing that?
You know, I started out looking for a job in my really early 20s, maybe 19 or 20, and I had the opportunity to work at a veterinary hospital. And I spent the next 25 years in veterinary medicine, and I worked my way up. Starting as a veterinary assistant and then a veterinary technician. Then I started doing some specialty kind of things with anesthesia and stuff like that. I really loved it. And there did come a point where I kind of started getting burned out on the clinical end of it. And it was near that time when I was diagnosed with rheumatoid disease. And I started kind of getting tired. I couldn't do the things I could do before, which I think led me to feeling frustrated. I didn't want to get frustrated with the animals. So I decided, you know what, I think it's time for me to take a break and go and work in administration. So I did clinical and then I did administrative work. I was an administrator at an animal hospital back in Illinois, where I'm from, and that really made a big difference for me. And it especially made a big difference in my decision. I knew I wanted to go back to school and finish my degrees, and I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to go in, if I wanted to go in the direction of being a veterinarian or being a social worker. And so I figured with how difficult at times veterinary medicine can be, because you have to move animals around and do all that, I thought, you know what? I've kind of been doing social work, working at the animal hospital and helping out the doctors and the staff and clients who would call and talking to them. So I decided to pursue social work.
I love that. And I love how introspective you were about not wanting to hurt the animals, you know. As an animal owner myself and somebody that struggles with chronic illness and disabilities, it's really easy to become very frustrated in certain situations and very tired. You know, we talk a lot about the spoon theory and how much energy it takes to do things. And having animals is definitely a big, it takes a lot of energy and a lot of time and commitment, obviously, to do that. But it's a different story when it comes to people with chronic illness and disability. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's very different because, you know, you're moving, you know, sometimes 100 pounds, 150 pound animals from the floor up into cages and things like that. And also I am being, the veterinarians are trusting me to be able to help hold the animals, help them in doing what they need to do. So if I'm not able to kind of give that my best, then I feel that it's a little risky. And it not only puts the animals at risk, but it can also put the staff and everybody else at risk too. So it was probably a good decision to do something different.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was thinking, you know, has your experience having a disability and chronic illness, has it affected the way you see your patients, the animals, and how they themselves are going through different challenges with their body, you know, getting older, getting disease, or whatever it may be?
You know, I definitely think that it parallels that. You know, when you look at animals who are getting older, and, you know, sometimes it also isn't about age. You know, it's really similar to us humans, you know, too. We have chronic illness at all ages. And, you know, it's the same thing for animals. And I think that it's very difficult for people when they need to start making hard decisions, end of life decisions about what they're going to do with an animal that isn't well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And so I think you do sort of hospice care, is that correct?
I do some hospice care. I do consultations. I think there's a lot of times when the veterinary field is really overwhelmed. And, you know, I've lived it and I've seen what it's like to have that pressure, you know, on the veterinarians and on the staff to be there for clients and to be able to walk them through everything. And, you know, I have nothing but love for everybody that's in the veterinary profession. And I know that they're all out there trying to do their best. But unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of clients who need more guidance or they need more help. Or they need somebody to talk to about that decision process. And that's kind of where I come in. I am helping to kind of, you know, wanting to help to ease the burden a bit for veterinarians and the staff, you know, to be there not only for them, but for, you know, those clients that are really struggling with what to do. And they really need somebody to talk to even more than just talking to their veterinarian or the staff.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, I think I've mentioned in the past when we've connected that I have a disabled dog who basically has a terminal illness, and finding that out with him being, he was supposed to be a service dog, was really, really a difficult thing to go through. And not to really have anybody there. I think it's interesting that you bring up that veterinary clinics and the people working there are overwhelmed, because that's not something that I would have really thought about before. Would you say that the pandemic has played a role in that?
You know, I think it's played somewhat of a role. You know, I'm a little concerned, you know, now with things getting back to normal. I'm hoping that all of those animals that were adopted, I really hope that they did find their forever homes and we're not going to notice any issues when people go back to work or they kind of get back to the regular routine of their lives, how the animals are going to fit into that. You know, I was also thinking, too, with your circumstances of seeing that, you know, seeing an animal that has gone from assisting you and helping you to an animal now that the roles are a little bit reversed, to the extent of You're now the person assisting that animal that once helped you. So I think that there's a lot of emotion involved in animals who do that.
Yeah, there is. I think that, you know, sometimes we don't really talk about service dogs, or we talk about them as this kind of, we put them on a pedestal and we don't really talk about the reality of having one and the complexities of the emotional side of things and the physical and financial component that comes along. And then when you take that service dog, and a lot of them will end up getting sick at some point in their life or needing to be retired for some reason. And to have that, essentially that aid that you were using to mitigate your disability just totally taken from you, but you still have so much love for this animal, is really a complex thing to go through. And especially, you know, Jackson, my dog, he was not even a year old and we were just in a training process.
Wow, that sounds like that would be really, really difficult to do. Are you Are you thinking of getting another therapy animal or an assistant animal?
Yeah, that's something I want to do. I've always been very connected with animals, and it was such this amazing, unique feeling having him by my side, knowing that even when he was in training, knowing that he was there, he was my buddy, he was my support, and that anything that I had to mitigate, I had somebody there in a way, you know? And I think that's definitely something I would want to have in the future. Of course, those plans are put on hold because I'm taking care of him. But I think one of the things to talk about too is this hard thing to try to figure out when you have a disability or a chronic illness and you want or need a service dog. How does your disability and your illness affect how you can take care of that dog? Because it often changes, how you feel changes, and it fluctuates. And so trying to gauge, okay, could I commit to taking care of this animal properly with the right training and financial support with my disability or illness? It's a really complicated thing to think about.
Yeah, it is complicated to think about. And there are plenty of us who have animals who aren't technically service animals, like myself, who does have a chronic disability. And, you know, this is something I talk about too in different stages in our lives, especially even with seniors who are getting older and have some medical issues, them taking care of their animals. I've discussed a lot of issues concerning that. So, you know, we are really, I think animals make such a difference in our lives. And I think what's important is looking at all the options that we have when it comes to having a chronic illness, how we're going to take care of our animal. If we can't, if something comes up, what plan is in place to help us deal with unexpected emergencies or things like that. So I work with that too with older people and making sure that we have friends or for them or people in place where they feel comfortable that could come walk the dog if they're not feeling well that day or that morning or help take care of the animal with them. Because I really like to see animals stay with us for as long as they're able to, you know, even if we do have disabilities. Because I think we get so much unconditional love and acceptance, and we really are able to share even our emotions with them. And they're there and they care about us as well. So I always like, you know, as a veterinary social worker to, you know, make sure that animals can stay where, you know, with their people and that they're able to do that for as long as they can. It's the same thing too with the homeless population and being able to feed their animals or take care of their animals. And in situations like that, they are really family to, you know, their animal could be the only family that they have. So, you know, I try to kind of look into that, do volunteer work for that with the homeless, and really pay attention to how we can keep everybody as healthy as possible and together for as long as possible.
I absolutely love that. And the things that you're saying, register with us as a social worker, because we talk a lot about when we're going through the process of getting our degrees and stuff, we talk about the benefits of different things we can bring into our life, whether that's religion or animals or any sort of self-care. And it's really fascinating to dive into the science or the understanding behind how animals truly affect us as humans and uplift our well-being, if you will. Do you have any insight into that? As I don't know any of the specifics on that.
You know, there is a lot of research that's been done as far as how animals affect us medically, how they release those kind of feel-good hormones. And that happens too for animals. You know, something like oxytocin, which is one of those uplifting, happy hormones. Both humans and animals receive that benefit, which I think is great. So it's mutual. It's an exchange that, you know, something that we're both getting We're looking at people have dogs. They're out there walking their dogs. They're out there being social where they might have been stayed more inside or things like that. For the physical well-being, we're looking at lower blood pressure, lower heart rate, things like that. So the research is out there and it's been done. It's really amazing what animals contribute to our physical, not only our emotional well-being, but our physical well-being as well.
It's amazing to see what animals can do. And as social workers, I think there is really something to be said for bringing that into our practice, or at least supporting that in our practice. Do you feel that this should be a larger topic? I know you said you've been teaching a class or you did teach a class. How do you feel about social work and having animals and using animal therapy and those sorts of things?
The class I was teaching was specifically for social workers and therapists and things like that. My thing is I want to bring an awareness to social workers so they can bring an awareness to get information from their clients in regards to the animals in the household. I think we can find out a lot of information as social workers when we have the right questionnaire or the right form that they can fill out. When they're doing an intake, I always say, please include questions about animals, because you're going to learn a whole lot. You'll learn who takes care of the animal, what the animal's like, and unfortunately, in some cases, you will learn of some domestic violence situations, some animals who are being abused as well. So there's a lot of information as social workers that I feel we can't ignore when it comes to doing intakes and things like that, to get that basic information from the person, how their household functions with an animal and what that looks like.
Yeah, and I know that you said that you do counseling, which kind of ties into the social work practice. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that counseling looks like from your side?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on what the person's looking for or what they need. I have worked with domestic violence, and something that's really big like that, as a social worker, you're working with different organizations as well. You're working not only with the family, but you're working with outside organizations that the animal needs to be placed somewhere temporarily. Or if somebody needs to be at a domestic violence shelter, do they take animals and things like that? And also, I would say another one really is doing patient advocacy, which is actually working with the clients and the veterinarian if there is an animal that's ill. But I also do like adoption adjustments too. A lot of people do want to adopt, but they haven't had a dog in a long time, or they don't know what kind of dog would be suited either for themselves or for their families. So I do new pet counseling. So it's pretty much across the board. I'm also a mediator. I do some dispute resolution when it comes to animals, and mediation, especially with divorce cases where there's animals involved. We kind of get into arguing in a tug of war as where the animals are going to go and where they're going to live and things like that.
Yeah, I could see how that would be very complex thing to try to navigate as individuals, and especially as a professional as well, and how important that could be to the animals and making sure that they are in the right place that they need to be, and that some place where they'll be happy and healthy.
You know, and I also try to, if I'm working with a client and their animals, what I want to try to do is make sure that their animals are current on vaccines, make sure that their health care is up to date and things like that. If they live in a part of the country that's prone to, say, to floods or natural disasters or stuff like that, that they somehow have a plan in place as to what's going to happen with my animal if I need to evacuate. Where is my animal going to go? What am I going to do? Am I taking the animal with me? There's also some planning that goes on, and things that I would talk about that really nobody's necessarily talking about. I don't know how much the veterinarians are talking about that, but I really feel that it's good all around. It helps the client be more at ease, and that they're in a state of preparedness, even with their animal. We've all seen the shots of the animal in the flood, and there it is on the roof, and our hearts are breaking, going, what's going on? How's this animal going to get help? Who did this animal belong to? We have all these emotions going through our mind. If there's a way that I can work with somebody and come up with a plan, so whatever they feel better, I think it makes a big difference to be prepared.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. It's something I really honestly hadn't thought about as a pet owner, is how to plan or how to prepare. You know, you just need a little cute little puppy, or that any animal really, they're always cute. You don't necessarily have the forethought at the time to think about how am I gonna plan for what could come up in that lifetime that we spend together.
Yeah, you know, when I watch people coming together and I see the organizations of people trying to help these displaced animals, either because of natural disasters or even a war, like with what's going on now in Ukraine. It breaks my heart that I see these people who love their animals and they're caring two dogs and their cats and everything else. I think it's also too important to advocate for shelters to take in animals, whether it's the larger shelters who are taking people in or refugees in, or the small domestic violence animal shelters, that we need to make sure that our animals, you know, we don't want to leave them behind. You know, we want them with us. We want to make sure that we can still take care of them, that we're going to be there for them. Nobody wants to abandon an animal. And if it comes down to that circumstance, I can't even imagine. I just find it horrific.
That is so saddening to see people having to get rid of essentially a loved one and a family member and somebody, really. I mean, we personify them into somebody that's there for us and care for us and that shares our emotions and our memories with us. And I love that you bring up Ukraine, because it is something that I think the world has looked at and seen those pictures of people carrying their giant German shepherds across, and how it's hard to even imagine being in that situation. And what would you do? And how would you feed them?
Yeah, and I think it is a really difficult situation. I think it's difficult for people who've had to abandon. And that's something that I hope to help with, that kind of aftermath of that trauma. Because truly, animals are our family. And I think many, many people see their animals as part of their family, and they are not going to leave their animals behind. But unfortunately, there are circumstances where they aren't given any chance with that. So I think that could just be devastating and have a huge traumatic impact on the person or children or anybody, because that's essentially a loss. We lose animals in different ways. We don't always lose them to illness. We lose them to natural disasters, like we're talking about. We lose them to places we need to live and we can no longer have an animal. So there's a lot of different kind of losses that go on that I'm hoping to help people get through.
Yeah, and I think that is so needed, because it really is it can be very traumatic and it can be a grieving process. And I hope that our listeners out there, if they're interested in this, that they reach out to you and look at ways of how to try to incorporate that into the advocacy work they're doing, or just who they're supporting, the shelters. And if you're a social worker, how can you start bringing that into your practice and asking important questions? So you got into this work about 30 years ago, correct?
Mm-hmm. about 30 years ago, I got into it. And, you know, I absolutely love it. I like having the veterinary experience because it offers a different perspective. I feel like it gives me a different perspective than just necessarily being only the veterinarian or only the social worker. And having lived through numerous animal emergency situations, not only working on that animal, but also trying to comfort pet guardians and things like that. So I think the combination for me has worked out well.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing the social work combination with it?
You know, I've been doing it probably now for about 3 years or so. And prior to that, I was working as a practice administrator. During that time, I had a lot of time to work with veterinarians and veterinary staff. It's a difficult job to do. We can talk about PTSD, fatigue, and things like that, that compassion fatigue syndrome that the veterinarians and the staff experience. It's not easy day in and day out. There's a wonderful side and there's a hard side to it. I definitely say it's worth it.
I think I've heard from veterinary techs and stuff talk about how people in the public often respond by saying that the hardest part is when they can imagine putting down a pet. But what I've heard from other folks that actually work in the vet industry is that there's a lot of in between that's actually harder.
Yeah, there is a lot of in between. I've seen a lot of things. I've heard a lot of stories. I've cried with numerous owners. I don't like to use that word, but pet guardians. It's been kind of an amazing journey. And I feel like I'm really excited now at this point in my life to be able to incorporate not having to leave necessarily animals or the veterinarian, but to be able to incorporate that into my social work practice. It's just been an ideal circumstance for me.
Yeah, and it seems like something that is so needed. I know when you first reached out to me, I got so excited having my own personal experiences with my dog Jackson, and just I really do think it's something that should continue to grow, and I hope that you could be at the forefront of that and teach people because you have so much knowledge. One thing that I think is important to talk about, if you don't mind, is the idea of being chronically ill or a disabled business owner, because that is in and of itself is just a whole other world to try to navigate. And I didn't know if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, when I decided to start my own business, I felt very fortunate. I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and they have an amazing program for new business owners. And I was able really to get the help and the coaching that I needed. That made a really big difference for me to have that support from a business coach, especially with paperwork and this whole other business realm that I really didn't know a whole lot about. So that was incredibly helpful. I think having a disability and being a business owner, I think there's a whole bunch of positives to that in the sense of I have control over my own schedule. I can take breaks if I need to. I can pay attention to that self-care so I don't get burnt out or things like that, which I think is so important for people who have chronic illnesses. So just really, I really pay attention to my self-care. We'll see what happens. You know, if it gets too crazy busy, I may take on another veterinary social worker in the future. But for right now, it's been going really well. And I think it's just really paying attention to my own body and what it needs and to really take care of that. Because if I do too much, I have to find that happy medium. Physically, if I do too much, then I get really, really tired and I'm kind of drained. If I don't do enough, then I feel like, I'm not feeling that well and kind of stiff and sore. So it's always that finding that middle, that work.
And do you feel like having a disability or chronic illness has changed the way you go about interacting with the people in your business?
You know, I don't think it changes that much. I do think it changes if I'm working with somebody who has a disability and sharing some of my own. I'm not opposed to sharing my own personal experiences with that. Working with people who need emotional support, dogs or therapy dogs or things like that. So I think that it's really about just being open and being honest with having a disability and what I can and can't do. Usually with counseling in situations like this, it's pretty much like we're doing now, or it's on Zoom or things like that. But I just think it's a balance, like I said.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point about it being on Zoom, because I know that, at least for me with the pandemic, the having things go virtual was kind of this weird shift of being less accessible but more accessible at the same time. For me, being hard of hearing, I can't hear as well on a virtual setting. setting, but I can do more because I don't have to push my body so much to get to where I'm going and all of those types of things. And I think that's an important conversation to have about accessibility, especially as a business owner.
Yeah, I think accessibility, it's made a big difference to have that kind of Zoom option. I also think there's something to be said to have an office and having somebody there and talking in person. I think that that's important as well. I do miss that. I think Zoom has kind of taken away that interaction that I think is really important. But I do think it's made a big difference for me with my disability and still being able to pursue working and a career. And it's made a big, big difference.
That, you know, a lot of times when we talk about disability, one of the things that comes up is employment and how employment goes down when people are disabled, or, you know, they come to be disabled in some way. It becomes harder and harder to be employed. And I think a lot of people with disabilities kind of look towards trying to create some sort of business for themselves where they can use the skills that they have and be able to have a flexible schedule that is accessible for them, however that looks.
I also think, you know, it's important for people to speak up. I never quite spoke up for my disability. And by that I mean, you know, if there were things I needed when I was at work, or if I needed a different chair, or if I needed something that would be easier for me to do, my tendency was to go ahead and do it anyways and keep my mouth shut. So it took me a while in my own personal journey and growth to be able to share my disability and to be able to go, these are some things I need. And these are some things I need even in the work environment. And I found, I mean, most are willing to get me the things that I need, of course, because that's what they need to do. But I think me speaking up has made a big difference to be my own advocate, if that makes sense.
That absolutely makes sense. And that is something I think a lot of people with chronic illness and disabilities struggle with, is the advocating for yourself part, especially in professional settings. You know, the idea of what do we consider professional, or how am I going to come across? And I guess I don't know if you have any thoughts about how professionalism plays into this whole idea of advocating for yourself.
Well, I mean, I think having been in school and studying and being a social worker, I do think that that makes a big difference. I'm used to advocating, right? I'm used to advocating for animals. I'm used to advocating for people, because there's an element of that being a social worker. That's what we do. To bring that advocacy around for me, for my benefit, that's kind of a different story. So I do think that being a social worker has helped me to be more open, be more honest with people, ask myself why I'm not sharing the fact that I have a chronic illness. Why do I feel sometimes the need to keep it to myself? So, you know, really just being honest with myself, and it's made all the difference.
I like that you bring up the idea of asking yourself why. That is something that I've tried to have conversations with folks about. If the why are we using the language that we're using, or why are we prohibiting either ourselves or others with disabilities from doing something? Even just language like saying wheelchair bound. Well, why are we saying bound? What is the thought process behind that? And I think it's important that we do the self-reflection in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. I definitely think that. And I think, you know, in being a social worker too, you know, the more I can educate people about my disability and be honest in how that affects me or my life or what I do, I have found that people have been nothing but supportive. So I think you just have to be honest and look at your own stuff, like we all have to, and go, how can I make my job easier? Is there anything I need that would make it more helpful? And just to really advocate for myself. And if I'm having a bad day, I'm going to have bad days. I have an autoimmune disease. So on those days, if there's a way that I can either leave work early or take care of myself or get some extra rest that I need, I feel like it's going to make that much of a difference in how I do my job and what I'm doing. And besides being a social worker, You know, I would have this conversation with somebody and go, what do you need to do differently? Or how are you advocating for yourself? I try to practice what I preach.
Yeah, right? that's always important.
Not always easy.
It's yeah, not.
Not always
no, easy. It really isn't. Yeah. It really isn't. Yeah, I think it's one of the things that I, you know, sitting here listening to you and I'm thinking about is that the differences that people have in perceiving a visible disability, like somebody using a wheelchair or something of that sort, versus invisible disabilities and a chronic illness. I know for myself, I've run into a lot of, it's much more complicated to navigate that and advocate for that because people can't see it. And it's really hard for people to understand a chronic illness, something that is not going away and it changes day to day and sometimes hour by hour and minute by minute, right?
Yeah. You know, in the invisible disability thing, I'm a real active in that area, and there's a really good invisible disability organization. I know for me, when I get really painful and I get unstable and I need to use a cane or something like that, it's really interesting because part of me doesn't want to use it. Part of me goes, oh, this would be much easier if people saw that I had a disability than treating me like I'm fine and all this and blah, blah, blah. But I think that I'm the one who's responsible to give that information out, how I'm feeling or what I can and can't do once again. So I really think it's a matter of letting people know where I'm at.
Yeah.
Because they can't be mind readers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because I also use a cane sometimes, and I do find myself thinking in the same breath, oh, this would make it easier and this would make it harder. But there is something to be said for it's a responsibility, but it's also yours to share. And so it's just weird trying to protect but also advocate for yourself. And I don't know about you, but like in airports and stuff, I always have such this weird conflict because I use my cane in the airport. And, you know, and when I had Jack, we trained in the airports and stuff. And it's nice to have a mobility aid or my service dog there, whatever. But at the same time, you don't know how people are going to react or what assumptions they're going to make about mm-hmm. you.
Well, and I also think, too, it's very interesting in some of the research I've looked at with service animals is they do open up dialogue between people that normally wouldn't be there. So, you know, people tend, when people see people with an animal, disabled or not, there's a tendency to talk about animals together or talk about your dog or the other person's dog together. So there's a social aspect of animals that are present when we're at the dog park and kind of having that camaraderie with other people who have animals. And I think, I don't know if that's been your experience with being at the airport. I don't know, do they tend to leave you alone or do they come up to you and go, who's this? Or do they acknowledge the service dog?
I think there's a mix of people. You know, that's such a hard topic because people are pet owners or guardians of service dogs. It does provide a social aspect and it does encourage you to get out more and be more independent and engage in life outside your home. But there are a lot of people that are very disrespectful or not quite aware of how to approach it. And they'll just touch the service dog even though they do not touch all over it. Or they'll distract it. And of course, that's a safety issue. But for myself personally, I didn't have too many instances where that happened, but I did have folks who were polite and asked, what is his breed? Or where did I get him from? Or what are we training for? And stuff like that. And that was nice because it felt like that was an opening to talk about things in an appropriate way that was actually beneficial to everybody. And I absolutely loved when parents wouldn't approach me, the family wouldn't approach me, but you would hear the parents talking to the little kids about like, that's a service dog, do not distract them, and like kind of teaching them. It was really encouraging to see like, okay, maybe we're going in the right direction here.
Uh-huh. Sure, I bet, yeah.
It's a very interesting experience. You know, I wish I had more to say on it because we did have to pull him from training, but what you say about dogs being a huge part of like your family and with service dogs, he was by my side all of the time and he continues to be even after I pulled him from training. And the bond there is just amazing. And I love that you're trying to facilitate that and encourage that kind of connection with people and being able to hold on to that. And I just wanted to thank you so much for coming on this podcast and sharing your story and your insight and being vulnerable with people. Is there a way that folks can reach out to you that have been listening?
Sure. They can go to my website. It's Veterinary Social Work Solutions. And you can kind of look on there and see what it is that I do. You can contact me from the website, or you can reach me, you can call me. The office number is area code 505-393-9733. Either way is fine. This way you'll kind of get to look and see more of what I do.
Yeah, I'll be posting your information in our social media so folks can go on there and also on the transcript to be able to find that information as well. And I believe you were kind enough to give our listeners a promo code for a half an hour, free half an hour consult. So that promo code is GREY, G-R-E-Y. 2022. When you go ahead and reach out to Emerson, go ahead and make sure you include that promo code and talk with her and learn all the insight that you can.
I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. It was great. You know, I love the work you're doing as well, especially working with social workers and disabilities and, you know, bringing that to the forefront. It's super courageous. It's really needed and appreciated. So thank you so much for having me on. Thank you.
Of course, and thank you. Definitely don't forget to use the promo code and reach out to Emerson. We'll have everything in the social media. Until next time. Well, Earthlings, that's it for today's broadcast. As Carl Sagan once said, somewhere something incredible is waiting to be known. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and I hope to see you next week. Be sure to check us out on social media at New Abilities Everywhere, and use the hashtag TheDannyProject to continue these important discussions around disability. You can also join the crew on Patreon for more exclusive content. Until next time, peace out.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.